It's called The Green Tree. Buddy Green in concert. We heard from the Zoe Group and their song Overflow, and from Lenny LeBlanc, song called The Rain. Good morning to you. 13 minutes after the hour. That'd be after 8 o'clock in the Central Time Zone. And I'm Jim Park. David Allen Punt is with us. He's our news guy doing news duties again this morning. And now from Texas, joining us is Dr. Don Clark, biochemist and member of the board of CreationMoments.com. Don, good morning to you.
Good morning, Dave, and good morning, Jim.
Yeah,
good morning, Jim.
We've got, no Minnesota conversation gets started without mentioning the weather. And not that I want to complain or anything, but, yesterday was the first nonstop rainy day I've seen here in a long, long time, and there were tornado warnings and watches out all over the southern and central parts. Of course, there were some severe, nasty tornadoes and deaths in certain areas of the country day before yesterday. But I woke up this morning to a brilliant white light, and I got my hopes up, and then I discovered, no, it was snow.
Oh, my goodness.
We must have had
you had snow again?
5 inches overnight, I'd say. Another two or three this morning. So, needless to say, it is funny how snow is delightful when it's the first one in November. And you kind of go, oh, this is, we're getting ready for the new season. But when it happens the second half of April, it's a real bummer.
Yeah, that's taken. Well, we had a little thunderstorms and some rain yesterday, but... Nothing unusual, and it's about 54 degrees here.
Okay, well, not
right
too
bad. Right now, and programmed to be about 70, 75.
Yeah, you got some sunshine, too, today, maybe?
Oh, yeah, we have sunshine.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah. This is Texas, come on.
Spoken like a true Texan.
Oh, yes. We'll have sunshine, I think we have ours in July. Usually like the second week.
Well, not the fourth. No, it would be like the fifth. It might be sunny.
2-3 days, and then it becomes cloudy again.
But that's why we're here. We come here so we can suffer.
Because we love the weather.
Good for the soul. Yeah,
is we love to complain about the weather.
Dr. Don, you brought an article in the Christian Science Monitor to my attention, and it's dated March 14th. And if folks would like to see it, it's at thechristiansciencemonitor.com. I don't have the whole link is a long one here, but I can suggest you just do a quick search for the red deer cave people. And the story is about a discovery in China of three skeletons that were found in 1989 by miners. And apparently they put all these remains someplace and just stored it because it wasn't studied until 2008. But now scientists are calling them the red deer cave people because they apparently cooked these extinct red deer in their namesake cave. And they're finding out more and more about these people. Dr. Don, what are we to conclude about new species of human beings? I suppose as a creationist, we'd say there's only one species of human being, and everything else is something else, isn't it? Or what would we say?
Well, you have two choices. Either these are humans or they're some form of ape. The skeleton that appears on the website, at least, I didn't do an extensive search on this to see if there's any other pictures, but the skull that appears on the website looks human. And the... I think many confusing things that if you don't have a biblical perspective and you don't keep in mind that, God's word is true, then you come up with all kinds of conclusions that, these folks look a lot different than anything we've seen before. They look kind of human. They look kind of, they're very ancient, but yet we found them 11 to 14,000 years ago, as dated by the piece of coal or coal that they found in the caves where they found the skeletons.
Now, I should mention too that the picture of the skull at the top of the article apparently is not of the red deer cave people. It says it's a Turmai skull that was found in 2001 in Chad in Africa. Now, why they picked that photo there, I don't know.
Oh, yeah. So why don't they put the skull of the ones that they actually found?
And I should warn people, there is a link to what it says are pictures of the Red Deer Cave people, but I hit that link and got all kinds of just virus notifications and warnings on my screen, so I just didn't go there. But you might want to do that cautiously if you're going to do it at all. But the article itself has enough information in it. And Dr. Don, you say without Scripture, without knowing what God gave us to work with, there's really no baseline here. It kind of a randomness sets in. And for science, that sounds kind of careless.
Well, I mean, they're doing kind of the best job that they can with their blinders on, instead of, you know, looking around and saying, well, gee, is there any information that we can get from historical records? And, you know, we, those of us who believe in the Bible, look at the Bible as both an historical document as well as theological truth. And so if you look at the, you know, if you take the Bible as a theological, as a historical document, then we know people lived, based on Genesis, people lived a long time. In other words, they were 900 plus years old, and, you know, then they died. That was before the flood. And then even after the flood, folks continued to live, you know, 500, 400 years, and it finally diminished to 120 by the time you get to Noah. I mean, by the time you get to Moses.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a rapid change in the environment, obviously, after the flood that affected man's lifespan. And with all of these fossils that are found, ancient man, you know, fossils, if you don't take into account that man could have lived 900 years, and that our skeletal structure continues to grow. Now, obviously, it doesn't grow at the same rate as when we were babies, but, for example, one of the features that they mentioned was a furrowed brow in the, you know, in the skull, and that feature is one of the features of the skull, you know, continuing to grow as it ages. And we saw this with Neanderthal man, and we see it with other...
So you're talking about a protruding brow. You're saying what happened to all of us if we lived long enough.
That's right. Mm. That's right. But we're dying young. I mean, even 70 or 80 years is considered, you know, old, or 90 years considered old. But the older you get, the, you know, your bones, like I said, continue to grow, and they you would look like an ancient if you live to be, you know, even 500 years old. You'd look different than what you look today.
Gee, I hope I could live long enough to look like a Neanderthal then, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's, I've never heard that before, and that's interesting. So what I'm hearing is that when they find specimens of humanoid-type creatures, particularly skulls, but other bones as well, that their temptation is to say this is another species if there's enough differences. But these differences could have happened naturally with age. Correct?
That's right. Hmm. That's right. It could be just because they're, what we're, you know, finding is, oh, they've got some remnants of some old folks.
Yeah, a senior citizen home or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jim, I've got, you know, the pictures are on a website called Live Science. And I disregarded your...
Oh,
your,
did you?
You got your that. Doom and gloom prophecy there, and I just went ahead and clicked on it anyway. And it's got a series of pictures. One of them is a an artist's reconstruction, and it kind of looks like Cuba Gooding Jr. It just yeah, and it's, you know, it's like you were talking about, Don, the artist's reconstruction, the hair is gray, suggesting that this is an older person.
Oh, so they.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not, I'm not sure. It doesn't say in this caption why the artist did that, but I thought that was interesting. That the facial features, there's a lot of wrinkles across the forehead, a lot of wrinkles around the eyes and under the eyes, and the hair around and the beard is gray.
Well, you're tempting me to hit that link there, Dave.
Yeah, go ahead, hit it.
Yeah, I think I probably
it'll be all right.
I'll
it'll
try.
Be all right.
Dr. Don, can we get DNA samples from fossils? Fossils are not the original material, are they? Isn't that expecting too much?
Well, it depends on what they found. Now, a fossil is a mineralized So, when we find fossilized fish or fossilized whatever, it's one, it's an indication that it's been underwater, because you can't have a fossil that isn't in contact with water, and with water that has a lot of minerals in it, because there's got to be a mineral exchange between whatever it is, whether it's a tree or whatever. But what they probably found was bone, and just very old, very old bone. And so can you get, you know, DNA from a sample like that? Well, if it's as old as it say, as they say that it is, that is 11,000 to 14.5 thousand years old, then DNA is not going to stick around, you know, that long.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing with the Jurassic Park is that they had these mosquitoes that were encapsulated in basically pine sap. And amber, and that then preserved the DNA so that they could later extract it, as the story goes. If you have some way of preserving it, okay, you might be able to get some fragments of DNA. But DNA is tremendously complex. It's a very long molecule. I mean, you know, we have many different strands of DNA in our in the nucleus of the cell. But even to isolate the DNA, it breaks up very easily. So if you take the DNA and you just stir it with a glass rod in a dish or something, you're breaking the DNA molecule.
Mm-hmm.
So being exposed to the environment for that many years, you're not going to really find anything.
Well, one of the claims of people studying these fossils are that this could represent a whole new species, a whole new a separate grouping of humans. And yet the article goes on to explain, and this is something I've often wondered, is how would you define what a human being is, whether modern or old? Now, and correct me if I'm wrong, this is one of the reasons we love having you on the air. I've heard that the difference between a mouse and a human in terms of DNA is like 2%, is like a 2% difference between mammals, perhaps. So between one presumed species of human and another one, the difference must be incredibly slight. But is there a definition of what a human is?
Yeah, I think most of these folks are taking their cues from the phenotype, from what they look like.
Mm-hmm.
And not necessarily, I mean, yeah, they do brain cavity, skull cavity, you know, measurements to see, okay, well, their frontal lobe was this big and this lobe was that big. And, you know, we know that on an average, you know, people have these size and shapes of lobes in the brain. And so they try to extrapolate, you know, from that, and try to extrapolate from the facial features and the bone structure. But, you know, quite honestly, as with, again, the Neanderthal, I mean, there is great variation, even today, in skull features, with the exception that we don't have this, you know, the furrowed brow and some of the prominent features that you get as you go beyond 100 plus, you know, years. You still have a great deal of variation in the lobe cavities of your brain.
Well, now, a few minutes ago, we talked about having a choice. It's either human or it's some species of ape, which suggests there's a dividing line. And historically, people have been looking for a missing link. That is, some creature that exhibits, 50-50, I suppose, 50% of the qualities of apes and 50% of the qualities of man. And, of course, such a creature's never been found. Without a more precise definition, should we even bother searching? I mean, obviously, you're curious. You want to find things and learn about your environment. But is there a practical way of determining a missing link?
Well, yeah. Is there a practical way? I suppose you could extrapolate between, for example, an ape and a human and look at various measurements, phenotypic measurements, and then determine, well, okay, this must be somewhere in between, so therefore, you know, it's a ape-human skull that we found, and yes, this is the missing link.
But of course, that assumes, that makes the assumption that there's a relationship, which is we would dispute as creationists anyway.
Well, that's right. But the Creator did create us with, as you know, just mentioned, that we have a lot of similarities. And so the designer is using similar biochemical mechanisms for, you know, most of life here on Earth. And so you're going to find same type of enzymes, you're going to find similar type of proteins, similar type of, you know, structural proteins and things like that between all of life, you know, here on Earth. And so it becomes, whether or not, as we talked about before, if you're looking from the top down saying, well, our Creator created it, and so they're going to be similar. We expect to see similarities. Mm-hmm. You can look at it from the bottom up and saying, well, we got these DNA similarities, and so therefore this species evolved from that species. And there's, you know, you don't have any way of really, you know, convincing yourself one way or the other that one answer is correct other than as opposed to the other, other than some extra type of source of material, and of course our material is the Bible, so that's what you're kind of left with.
Yeah, it seems to me that knowing human beings as I do, or as I believe them to be, that there's really no satisfactory way for science to resolve this from the bottom looking up without going back to Scripture, because what it boils down to is forming a consensus in the science community of a certain truth, and certain people adopting the theory or the belief and being persuasive enough to convince others. But the evidence itself, that is the DNA and the physical evidence, leads to several possible conclusions. One of them is a Creator, and no less logical than evolution. So how do we turn the tide here? We need to have some people out there persuading otherwise, I think, don't we? Or do we? We probably do. I mean, you're one of them.
Oh, no, we do. We do. Yes, we do have folks, you know, talking about the biology and talking about, I mean, this discussion's been going on for over 40 years, very actively, actually, and Henry Morris, as we've talked about maybe in the past, was one of the early folks talking about this, as well as Robert Lang, who started Creation Moments, or the Bible Science Association. To, you know, again, bring up these topics, and Robert Lang was doing it mainly for his church and his youth group and the young folks, to try to give them some an alternative to what was being, you know, spoken of in the colleges and the universities, you know, give them a defense to say, hey, you know, the Bible is a possible explanation for all this as well. And so, you know, this is one of those things that you're not going to necessarily come down and say definitively one way or the other, that it is, if you're looking at it from an evolutionary point of view, keeping God out of it, and we have to interpret all this data without some type of supernatural, you know, Creator, I think those folks really have a hard time, because everything that you see around us has got, you know, design, you know, labeled all over it. Mm-hmm. And so to ignore a Creator, we go back, you know, to the premise that, you really have to be in rebellion against God, whether you know it or not, that, you know, is exactly what you're doing.
And that's the only explanation to my mind, for the attitude that the establishment has taken with respect to evolution. Because they simply choose not to consider a possibility that is at least as likely as the evolutionary one for human presence here.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I remember from my ancient times, in my undergraduate days, and I took an anthropology course and a number of other sociology courses, and I remember the phrase tends to. And I remember asking professors a number of times, if this is this and this is this and this is this and we have this evidence and we've done this research, the results tend to suggest or tend to show. And that was always a little not rock solid for my taste. And I remember asking instructors a number of times, especially in anthropology, that if this is this and this is this, then that tends to. And I said, well, isn't it just as easy to say it tends not to? And I think I remember a lot of raised eyebrows and a professor now and then just kind of rolling his eyes and saying, well, this is the way we're going to teach this course.
Yeah.
And well, move on. But there never seemed to be any definitive answers, but there seemed to be kind of sort of towards this particular preconceived notion answer. And right. And that was that was in the 70s, and even in those days, it seemed like I'm going to find the stuff that looks like it's going to lead to the conclusion I already have.
Well, you're looking to prove this theory of evolution, which remains a theory to this day.
Yeah, I mean, it's still a theory.
There's no law of evolution.
Yeah,
but even science is not brave enough to I think to come out and say, well, maybe I'm.
No, that's not true. I mean, what is being touted these days is that evolution is a proven fact, and that's the professors were openly talk about that, and then if you try to refute it, I mean, you get more than the raised eyebrows. You get an attack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
Well, and this was in the Midwest, so we don't get it. We don't attack anybody here.
Too nice for that. Dr. Don, give us a little bit of a timeline here. Now, I know you're a young Earth believer, and you calculate the age of the Earth creation about 6,000 years ago. Is that correct?
That's right.
And then the flood at about 4,000 years ago?
Yes, a little bit. 3,600 years ago, something along in those ballpark.
Is it possible that some of these fossils, these skeletal remains of early cultures, predate the flood? Okay, is that a possibility?
Well, I suppose it's a possibility. They are saying, well, based on the age of the coal,
carbon dating
the carbon dating of the coal that dates this people group at the end of the ice age. Well, of course, their timing for the ice age is way off from what we would understand the timing of the ice age is. They would say that there were many ice ages. Some were major, some were minor. And we would say that there was one continuous ice age that waxed and waned over a much shorter period of time.
Where does this ice age fall in the timeline that we just established? Before the flood, after the flood?
Well, no, it was... It is logical to assume that it was after the flood.
Okay.
Now, here's the reasoning behind that. In that you had, before the flood, the Earth was relatively warm. And so the oceans were warm, and the Earth is warm, and you had, you had vegetation pretty high up, north and south. And so... We had growth all over the place, as well as, we said that, the Earth was one landmass at one point in time.
Mm-hmm.
And so before the flood, you had warm waters. after the flood, you had a period of time where there was a lot of volcanic activity. So you had a lot of volcanic dust in the air, which blocked the sun, which caused the land mass to cool down more rapidly than the water. And in order to get any type of precipitation, you need a temperature difference. So you need the water being warm so that you can pump moisture into the atmosphere. And then you need a cold area so that that water can then condense. And in this case, in case of an ice age, it would freeze. And so there was a lot of moisture in the air, a lot of cold ground, and that's really what caused the ice age. So the flood is a very good explanation for the ice age. Multiple volcano eruptions after the flood is again a very plausible thing, because you have these tectonic plates that are breaking apart and moving, and you can be, Hawaii could be forming during that time.
And water changes temperature more slowly than land, is what we're saying too, right? It tends to retain or stabilize. Yeah.
Well, there's much more of it. I mean, that's true. 2/3 of the Earth is covered with water, so you've got a heat sink basically, and so that the water stayed warmer for a longer period of time, until it's projected that, well, this activity could have gone on for a period of 700 years or so. So, the post-flood ice age, looking at about 700 years, waxing and waning depending on the volcanic activity, to throw dust up in the air, which would then, block the sun. If you had a dormant period, for example, where there wasn't a lot of volcanic activity, then the dust would settle, the sun would come out, things would warm up, and then you repeat the cycle, as you've got more volcanic activity.
But this would have created stress on those things living on the Earth, humans included, and perhaps certainly changed the fauna and the flora.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. And there were microclimates. I mean, even in Alaska, there were regions that had an ocean air current that came across the land that really didn't freeze for long periods of time. And we've got animals, remnants of animals in that area that suggest it was grassy at one point in time, and then suggest that it was desert at one point in time. So you had both types of animals in the same area, depending on, what was going on around it. But it was a concentrated area for life for a period of time after the flood. But, I mean, here's the thing. I mean, the real question is, are these people, the Red Deer Cave people, pre- or post-flood?
Mm-hmm.
And then how close to the flood are they? Because if they're post-flood, that means that there were they're descendants from one of the eight that came off of the, if you talk about Noah's sons and mm-hmm. his wives, then they're descendants of three families. We don't have any information that Noah had any other children, but they're descendants of at least the three families, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And that would date them at the flood, or just immediately post-flood. And then, they would migrate, from that time. And so how old could they possibly be, post-flood? I mean,
okay, and of course the article is saying 11,500 to 14,500 years old, but we would be more likely to say maybe 4,000 years old, 3 to 4.
Yeah, 3 to 4, right, yeah. Exactly. 3 to 4, and that's getting you into the time of perhaps Moses, and so these folks aren't going to be actually living that long. They probably, even if they live to be 120 years old or so, you're not going to see the bone structure changes that I was talking about before, other than you're going to,
of course. And what you said suggests that the picture of this skull at the top of the article, which is not one of the Red Deer Cave people, would be of a much older human being, assuming it was human. It has the large ridge on the brow. And I did, David, dare to take that link to the photos of the Red Deer Cave people, and it worked this time. And it was interesting. Okay. Interesting to look at that.
Yeah, I think those pictures are partially fossilized, not entirely, because there's large gaps.
Well, I think they've reconstructed parts of them.
Yeah, they're reconstructed, and the fossilized parts had probably fallen away. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing. Is that accurate, Don?
Well, the skull got crushed, and then this is remains. And then, depending on, again, if you have a fossil, it's got to be in contact with water. Fossils just don't form in the air. Mm-hmm. So you got to have a mineral exchange going on somewhere. Mm-hmm. And it looks like, at least from the photo, that the teeth are, perhaps they're natural teeth and not necessarily fossilized. You can't really tell from a mm-hmm. photograph, but it looks like teeth are full of enamel, and he's missing some teeth. Obviously, didn't have dentists at that time, but
there's not very good ones.
You're right,
Dr. Don. If we start with Noah's Ark and the families on the Ark surviving the flood. And the Bible tells us that they spread out from the Middle East to form different people groups. Isn't that very much like what science has concluded as well, that most of the human strains that they've traced and cultures derive originally from the Middle East, the Fertile Crescent? Is that a fair statement?
Well, I think a lot of folks think that they came from Africa. This goes back a number of years. I mean, a number of years. It was probably in the 80s when I read this, that they were saying that it looked like all people groups came from Africa. We know that all people groups came from the Middle East. And, of course, one of... Noah's sons went south, went over towards Africa. Another one went north, up towards what we would now call Europe. And then another people group went west over to Asia in very gross general sense. So apparently, the sons did at least, they separated, or their ancestry separated at some point in time and went in different directions.
I can't imagine it being the same generation. I think I would have stuck like glue to my family after that kind of a flood experience.
If there was only eight of you,
let's stick together here. We'll build our huts and just kind of hang out together here for a while. Yeah, that would have been. This has been fascinating, Dr. Don, and again, we're grateful that you've chosen to spend time with us this Monday, as you do just about every Monday. An interesting discussion on the Red Deer Cave people. Again, if you'd like to read the article, it's at the Christian Science Monitor. That's csmonitor.com, and then you could search for Red Deer Cave people. I'm sure it would bring up the article, which is dated the 14th of March. Don Clark, a biochemist and, again, a board member at creationmoments.com. How are things going at Creation Moments these days? What's happening there inside?
Well, we are... we're doing well. We have we continue to get, of course, requests from people around the world asking if they could use our Creation Moments and translate them into other languages. For example, we have a fellow in Russia that's translating them into Russian, and we do have a Spanish program. as well, and we're doing that translation. We're actually contracting for that translation ourselves and having it read in Spanish. And so the creation message, as we proclaim our 2-minute program, is really being spreading throughout the world. And we're exploring. We are not really, I wouldn't say, not necessarily actively talking about perhaps a brief creation moments that would be a 1-minute long segment. That tends to be the trend in radio today. They want shorter and shorter, blurbs. So we're beginning to look at, okay, can we take some of these and turn them into a 1-minute program?
Well, that'd be a real challenge. I was noticing last night all the 15-second television commercials. Does seem to be that has to be cost cutting somewhere, I would think. But you're right. Shorter and shorter, briefer and briefer. Things you can text quickly.
Yeah, exactly. It's hard to keep people's attention, which is crazy, because when we were growing up, I mean, we would listen to the radio sometimes for for hours, and most of it was talk or some type of story. And today it's very difficult to get the younger folks, especially.
Relates to attention spans, I suppose. Just too much impacting us. We're moving too quick, and I think we're losing a lot. I frankly would hate to see an abbreviated creation moments. I think it's a superb program now, and the website for anybody out there for consider creation moments as a resource for information for your church or your Bible studies or your small group discussions. It would be excellent that way. It's creationmoments.com, and you can link to them right off of our website at brokenroadradio.com, and they'll get you there right quick. Dr. Don, thank you very much for spending part of your Monday with us, and go enjoy your sunshine and your 70 degrees down there.
Well, make some snowmen for us, because we haven't seen that.
Gonna run right out there. Yeah, I think so. Don, be blessed. We'll talk to you again next Monday.
Bless you all, too.
Music from Bob Carlisle.